Hello, and welcome to The Wall Behind and Beyond. I am your host, Philip A. Jones. Today, we have a guest who has turned her experience within the criminal legal system into a thriving reentry support program. Through her organization, Evolution Reentry, she brings her knowledge, skill set, and raw perspective to bear as she helps formerly incarcerated women and their families navigate the process of reentry from start to finish. She knows what it takes to be successful, as she herself is a returning citizen who, after being incarcerated, had to overcome the very same challenges that her clients now face. Please welcome Jacqueline Povarari to the show, everybody. Thank you for joining me, Jackie. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you, Phil? Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I wanted to get a hold of you for a while now because the things you're doing out there are phenomenal. When we're coming out of these places, people don't expect much. But you have, you know, broke the mold on what it is to get home, re-enter, make a smooth transition. And this is the model that other people need to see, too. So I wanted to ask you some questions and interview you. And now that I got you on the show, how about we do that?
Sure. I'd love that.
Okay. Let's get it going then. My first question for you is, I understand that you are also Justice in Packet. Can you tell us where you're from and a little bit about your background before we go further?
Sure. I'm from New Haven, Connecticut, and I served a year in Danbury Federal Prison in 2015 for a financial crime. And when I came home from that, it got worse, and that's about me. I have a master's degree in social work and business, and recently I just got my master's degree in criminal justice. So I am working there in this space.
That's right. That's what's up. Well, education is the key, and I can see that you've been doing a lot of studying, and I tell people all the time, education is the difference maker. Sometimes, you know, if you have raw talent, that's cool. But when you got the education to go with it and know exactly what you're talking about and have the experience, that just takes you to a whole nother level. So appreciate you pointing that out and letting us know. I was reading your bio, and I saw that you have an organization called Evolution Reentry Services. Can you tell us what prompted you to start a reentry program?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I went in 2015, there was no resources to, criminal justice was not spoken about very much. It was very hush hush. So when I came home, I think that's when the hardest part for me was the barriers that I was facing and what many, many other men and women face when they come home from prison that people don't understand. It's a life sentence. You're looking at having people have been there for a long time, don't even have driver's license, identification to open a bank account. So I met some wonderful, wonderful women in Danbury. And when I got in trouble, I owned a title company with an attorney. And that's really what went wrong for me. And the name of the company was Evolution Title. So I came full circle and opened up Evolution Reentry Services for women who are justice impacted and need resources for housing, employment, support. We have support groups. We also speak with husbands and children. Families is a large part of our organization. And that has moved forward in the last 8 years, taking on a lot of different roles.
For sure. I love it. I was looking earlier today, and I wanted to be prepared for the show. It's clear that research is definitely pointing out that reentry programs work because they reduce reincarceration. You know, when you think about reentry programs, when you're coming out of prison, you need to be able to obtain employment, you need to be able to obtain education, and you definitely need to be able to reunite with your families. But when you combine all of that with people that's there to support you, and you got the resources, it makes it that much easier for people to succeed. And so every time I see people doing what you're doing, I really, really want to talk to you because we need that example out there for others to follow. So thank you so much for that.
Oh, thank you. And don't forget generational incarceration. If we don't help the people coming home, it's just a cycle. Their kids go in and then their kids go in. And that's what really a big part of my reentry is about. I have three kids. And if I didn't have the support I had, I'm not quite sure what would have happened when I entered the system with them.
I think you make an excellent point about generational incarceration. I see guys in here all the time. Their sons are in prison with them. And people say, well, what's going on? Is it like father like son? No. When you remove the parent from the home, the kid is a lot more likely to end up in the same situation because he doesn't have that family support. He doesn't have his dad to show him, you know, right from wrong, or to just be a balance in his life. And so when his dad is gone, it heightens the chances and probabilities that those children may follow in their footsteps. So I think it's good that you guys focus in on generational anti-incarceration and work with the families as well.
Yeah, I think that's a huge piece. That's what's going on with it. We're rolling out a model 2024. It's a housing plan for incarcerated individuals when they come home and their justice impacted to be able to actually get home ownership. That's a large piece that many people come home and they can't afford rent. They can't afford a home, and there's no pathway for them to obtain those things in the future. And I like to think about us helping people with careers, not just jobs, and home ownership, and bringing together families. It's just reintegrating people into society is so important for both sides, for families and for the person who's justice impacted.
For sure. You know, something I was just thinking, that's unique for a reentry program. You got a lot of reentry programs out there, but you're one of the first people I've heard talk about creating housing plans so that people can come home after incarceration and have home ownership. I mean, they're not talking about that at most, if not any of the reentry organizations out there. And so I give you kudos for that. And that's something that I was interested in when we talked initially too, because I feel like that is the first step in breaking generational incarceration. And you said it too on one of our calls, that you leave the children something that they have that's tangible, that they don't have to fall into poverty. So if you want to speak on that some more, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd love to. So like I said, I had a title company. So I've been doing title searching for 35 years. So I consider myself an expert in title. I do a lot of expert witness testimony. And I started to think I was doing some title searches for foreclosures. And I noticed there were so many houses that were empty, owned by banks, that were foreclosed on. And they fell through the audit and they've been sitting there for a long time. So I decided to reach out to a few of the banks and credit unions that own properties and ask if they would be interested in doing a homeownership program where currently the house is empty. It's somebody coming home who has children, has a family, can move into the home and put their heart into the home, painting, keeping up the outside while living there on a program for 2 years. And in that meantime, they aren't paying rent. They're living there and sustaining the home. So the bank is saving money and not having to pay somebody to keep the house up. And we have an education program so they can get education and work on a career. At the end of the 2 years going through the program, they are eligible to obtain a mortgage from that particular bank or credit union. And we have our first credit union who has donated that and is partnering us with our very first house coming up. I'm very, very excited. And it's never been done where people have now a purpose. Right, to own their own home. And that to me is giving a house is very different than a home. And often when people come home and they move into an apartment, a condo, rent a house, it still isn't a home for them. And their children are displaced and they're in different school systems. So I think that was one of the big things for me and being in the industry, in the real estate industry, seeing the mess we're in right now, and there's so many just empty homes not being used. I'm really excited to start this program. That's something that I'm so excited for.
Oh, wow. Hey, that's so fabulous. Where is your reentry organization based out of? Like, what demographic do you serve?
We serve the entire country. The housing mm-hmm. program is based in Connecticut right now. We're in New Haven County. And mm-hmm. we have support groups that we have women and families from all over the country that dial into. And we're hoping to bring the home ownership program when it succeeds. We will be branching out into other states and hopefully having other reentry companies copy it. And I'd be happy to even give them the plan, because for me, it's mm-hmm. not about, it's about everyone working together to get this done.
That's dope. I was thinking about my reentry workbook from Exit to Excellent. And I was thinking, as you was talking, that's kind of like what we do. It's licensing. And so we don't care where they're at in the country. If they want to utilize our book, we'll give them licensing options so that way they can do it annually. But yeah, I think you should take that and branch that out everywhere, because that's a unique program you got, and I love it. So keep that going and spread that out. I'm sure a lot of women coming home can benefit from that.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it, and women and men. This year we're working on, I primarily have always worked with women, so I am working with women mm-hmm. this year, and then we're rolling out the program for men and women when they come home. And it, you know, it frustrates me, because one of the stigmas is, I read an article today, and I self-surrendered in 2015 with Teresa Giudice. And mm-hmm. I read an article in People magazine where she came out today and said that prison was easy, and she cooked and had fun, and all of these glamorized her time in Danbury because she's doing cookbooks. And I thought really hard about whether I was going to discuss this or not with you. However, it's so mm-hmm. important to me that people understand that what is read about prison from celebrities is not the truth. It's glamorized for monetary reasons, and it really hurts everybody who's been incarcerated or is incarcerated, because it makes prison look glamorized. And it is absolutely not the truth. There is no baking of muffins. There is no cooking for the entire prison. That doesn't happen. And those are things that bothered me today, because I have women that are in Danbury right now, 160 women. They're not baking muffins. In fact, some of the food that they're eating is marked not for human consumption, as you know. I mean, eating a lot of the food. So it's hard for reentry companies out here, because there's so many people doing the work. We're on the ground trying to do the work so hard. There's companies, mm-hmm. you know, the smaller reentry companies, there are people like a Lewis Reed or a Glenn Martin or a Clover Perez. These people are doing incredible work. And then it gets downplayed by a celebrity who's trying to sell cookbooks and using prison for her advantage. So I hope anybody who listens to this can please go on and, you know, just write comments that those things aren't accurate in prison.
Well, first of all, I'm sitting here, so nobody can tell the story better than I can about what prison really is. But you ain't wrong. You was just keeping it 100. They're misrepresenting what it's like to be in prison. Those celebrities, every time they tell you those old stories where they try to present prison as being some type of cushy environment where, you know, you're having fun, it's because they're trying to capitalize and make some money off regular people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh,
regular
my God.
People, regular people get sentenced to 100 years in life. Celebrities get sentenced to 6 months or something. So that's a whole different reality. We need to keep that real.
Oh, yeah. Think about it. I mean, I was fortunate and blessed. I was there a year. And I thought, I can come home while women and men are still there and try and help and make resources to come home. Can you imagine if these celebrities who have millions of dollars come home after being incarcerated instead of worrying about their pocket, helping and giving back to the men and women that are there after them coming home? And I think that's what frustrates me the most, because there's not enough resources for men and women who are coming home, and especially their families. Their families they're the victim. They're collateral damage to the system, because often men and women are taken from their children for unnecessary reasons, when we can be helping them, giving them mental health services, giving them education, and rebuilding lives, not destroying lives.
Yeah, you were right on point with that. I'm glad you brought it up and didn't hold that back. Because I'm glad you brought that up and didn't hold that back, because they come home and they want to sell cookbooks and ponchos. So they basically capitalizing off of people's misery. And that's not cool at all. So don't believe the hype, y'all. Hey, everybody. If you are enjoying the show, don't stop here. Check out my YouTube channel at The Wall Behind and Beyond to become a subscriber. Also, if you'd like to learn more about the projects and work we are doing going forward, you can do so by checking us out at www.pajconsultingllc.com. Thank you again, and enjoy the show. My next question for you is, what would you say are the most important issues to address in reentry work?
Oh, absolutely. It would be housing. Home ownership to me, mm-hmm. housing, employment, education. I have to say family, because I think there's four things. I think the first thing, though, for me is grace, right? Because I don't believe in second chances. I believe that everybody here on the earth, we all make bad choices. And I made poor choices. And yeah, so this notion of second chances is another thing that I think it's really important that we change language, because I think everyone deserves chances and grace. People often make poor choices. That is how we learn. It's not about the poor choices we make. It is about how we learn from those poor choices. When we have babies and children, when they're learning how to walk and they fall, we don't keep pushing them down. We lift them up. I don't think there's enough lifting up of people when they come home, and they're set up to be depressed, and their mental health isn't a state. And these people, women I've known who've been in prison for 10 years, they come home, they don't have driver's license, they don't have social security cards, they don't have birth certificates, they don't have anything. And to get a job, they need to have all those things. But to get one of those things, they have to have one of the other things. It's a huge challenge coming home after a 10-year prison sentence. And I believe that as humanity is just fallen because we don't give anyone that resources and lift them up. There's so many barriers that need to be broken. So I can't even say, Philip, there's three most important things, because everything that's important is important because of another thing, because it's a domino effect. If one of those things doesn't work, the entire thing doesn't work.
Thank you so much for pointing that out. As we know, returning citizens, they are all burdened with stigmas. They have inherent biases against them. They continue to be stereotyped. I don't think that people should be branded as criminals forever. They should be welcomed back into their communities, free from character attacks that's based on their past conduct. You know, they spent their time to pay their debt, so let them be admitted. If a returning citizen, if they renounce their criminal past, why should they still be stigmatized when they reintegrate back to their communities? We gotta let the debt be paid and gotta let them move past that. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. I can't even tell you the first neighborhood of the house that we got. Our largest threat and barrier was the community did not want us to have access to the house to put somebody who was formerly incarcerated in the neighborhood. And that was huge. And it never crossed my mind when I was starting the program that that would be a barrier, because I wouldn't think of anything that way. So we had to really talk with the neighborhood, which is why the neighborhood wanted, it was easier to put a woman in there the first year. But it's shocking to me how people think of others that were incarcerated. And it really, that stigma, if we don't educate society and educate communities on our returning citizens, they're just going to recidivate and go back to prison. And that's
absolutely
how the government wins. That's mass incarceration.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you 100%. Speaking of which, you also mentioned on your website that the reentry work you do is a collaborative effort. Why is collaboration so important in the process of reentry, and how does that look?
I'll give you an example. Like, yes, especially the past week. So I'll get a phone call from someone in St. Louis who has someone coming home in Connecticut, and I immediately have resources. I had a woman coming home in Denver. I called up a reentry company in Denver, and they immediately had resources. If we don't, everybody has their own lane, right? I'm lucky. I have a title company, title, homeownership. That's my lane. And other people, mental health is their lane. Other people, employment is their lane. If we collaborate together as a reentry collaborative, we're powerful. And it often is that in this space, people are trying to step over each other to get that grant, to get that funding, and not working together, but working against each other. And it really needs to change within the own reentry space. And I love collaborating with people. I don't understand a lot of the, I don't often like to be upfront. I'm a behind the scenes worker. And saying this is difficult because there's so many people that'll be upset, but wow, you guys out there doing reentry need to come together and start working together as one, and we can have resources throughout the country, limitless. That's important to me. Mm-hmm. So I do collaborate with every reentry company that I can. And I feel just lifting people up in all aspects and all avenues is the way we're going to stop mass incarceration, stop and end recidivism, stop and end generational incarceration. Those things are important to me because our youth, you know, they got a tough life as it is. They're all hit with COVID, our youth, their life is changing, and they need help from people our age. And if we're not doing it, then what are we looking at for our future?
For sure. That is a powerful statement, and that's the word of the day, collaborative reentry, collaborative criminal justice work. And you hit it on the nose because, again, a lot of people think that the space is small. It's over 2 million people incarcerated in America. The space is huge. There's so much work that one group can't do it. And so why are people so threatened by other people that's out here doing the same work and putting in the same work that they're putting in? If they came together and collaborated, it's enough room for everybody at the table. That's what I always say. Oh, they look at me kind of crazy sometimes because I'm inside and I'm sitting at tables because that's what I'm about. You know what I mean? I'm about coming together with people and bringing about results. I'm a consultant. That's my business. So I never say, too many people is in the way or me or anything like that. I look at that as an opportunity, and I utilize that to my greatest advantage. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I would much rather work with other people that like to be up in front. You know, there's leaders that lead from up front, and there's leaders that lead from behind. I like pushing people up, and there's got to be the leaders up, you know, in front, pulling them. And with that collaboration, how could they fall, right?
That's awesome. That's key. What is one of the most challenging aspects of the work we do as advocates is promotion. How do you get the word out about your services and overall program?
Well, that's another reason why we need to do collaborative work. because for me, I do have my website. I have a podcast called Criminal Justice Cafe. And I do all of the social media that I can. We SEO, we do tagging, but it's just not possible for people as they're Googling, you know, I need help. I'm going to prison. So for me, I refer out to anybody. I have policy people. I have employment people. I have people all over the country that it will happily pick up the phone to anybody. And the other thing is, I really don't like these new prison consulting firms that are coming out. I had one woman that I spoke to. She was charged $18,000 to be told what she's going to go through in prison. I was flabbergasted. Why would anybody charge to be kind, to help somebody, to talk with them about what they're going to go through? I can't imagine playing on someone's fear like that in their darkest moments. So I try to, again, stay clear of all of the, I guess you would say, use the promotional stuff. I don't really like the people that are doing the promotional things, selling themselves. I think the word of mouth and collaborative work is more powerful, if that makes sense to you.
Yes, of course. Everyone who's out here in the space doing the work, they definitely deserve to be compensated. I think that they definitely, because they're bringing a skill set and they're putting in their time and they're doing their research. But I think where you're coming from when you talk about how you're going to be a prison consulting firm and you don't have any experience in this situation and you're out in the world. But you really can't tell nobody about the condition. It's got to be somebody that's sitting in it. And that's why I don't like people that's out there in the world is talking about what's going on in my situation, and they're not even in it. Half of them never been here. Half of them never felt the pain of it. So, like I say, I get it, but I can only speak for myself. Nobody can speak for me because nobody can feel my pain, right? So that's exactly. I think that's just on a, you know what I'm saying? So we're not out here trying to undercut anyone. We're just saying that it's enough space for everyone, especially if you're bringing about change. I'm getting results, and that's the main thing. And I know you're getting results because I've seen what you're doing out there, and I've really paid attention. So, again, we're speaking about those out there that don't have that passion for the work they do, but they'd rather, you know what I'm saying, get out there and promote themselves. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and if I can clarify, too, and – my thing is, it's not because I think there's so much funding to go around. So I guess what I mean more of is if you were getting funded by so many organizations, we don't need to be charging astronomical fees to people that are going to be going through the system. So I know when I was going in 2015, I was terrified. And I didn't know what I was looking at. I never knew anything about prison. And I had people calling me when I was at my most scared saying, okay, well, we can help you with this. $10,000 will help you go through it. We'll help you, the emotional piece. And for me, I would rather have spent that $10,000, and I did, on legal fees. And when I came home, I needed that resources. If you know what I'm saying. I think that everybody does have a space, and I do, not that I'm saying nobody should charge for anything, because I do believe they do, and they should, like you said, get paid for what they're doing and what their expertise is. I do think, though, that we often, in this space, have a lot of people that are putting out feelers to help people in their darkest moments for a fee, that, like you said, didn't walk through the system or even go through the system.
Well, thank you for clarifying that. I mean, I agree with you 100%. Everything you said was spot on. And what are you currently working on as a project or in addition to all you have already accomplished?
Well, I'm actually, I just started doing a research project on disparities in sentencing. I'm a researcher, obviously. That's what I've been doing for 30 years. And I've done one research that was published on minimum security prisons, but I noticed recently that I have two women, one of them getting 10 months for something and one of them getting 32 months. They both did the same thing. One who got 10 months has a larger restitution than the sentencing makes no sense. And I think that instead of these long sentences, we could be more productive in shorter sentencing with more education, more programs, more resources, and getting people home to rebuild their lives. So I'm doing a research paper on those disparities, and the rest of my time is all on the home ownership program right now.
Wow. Disparities in sentences. Make sure you check out Maryland, because there's definitely a need for what you're doing over in my state. They passing out big sentences for things that you would not imagine. I agree wholeheartedly. You said shorter sentences and more education. And I guarantee you if they use that as a recipe, that they will see recidivism reduced and that they will see less people doing time in prison. That's all it takes.
Shorter
sentences, more education.
Yeah, absolutely. More mental health services, because we don't give that. And we're using prisons for mental health services. People who are down and they have addiction problems, let's send them to prison because, you know, they made poor choices while they were addicted to a substance. And often I say, if we had addiction services that could help people versus punish people, we are in a purely punitive system, and it does not work. We all know it does not work. Dismantling it and rebuilding it is huge, and that's really what my motto is for reentry. Is I'm tearing reentry down right now and rebuilding it because it's not working for people. There are too many people are going back to prison on technicalities, on things that they've done. They're getting from probation, they're getting sent back, and that shouldn't happen.
How can our listeners learn more about your work, and how does someone get involved?
They could reach out on my website, which is www.evolutionreentry.org. We have a sign-up sheet for mentorship. We have a sign-up sheet to be involved for general interest. And they can reach out to me through that website, and we can have a chat. Anybody who would like to help in any capacity. I mean, I have hairdressers, hairstylists. We do a prom gown program for kids, and we do free haircuts that whole week of prom for children of incarcerated individuals, boys and girls of incarcerated individuals. That anyone that can help in any capacity, even if it's to call someone's kids every day. My daughters talk to other daughters and just pick up the phone and say, hey, do you guys need anything? I know your mom is incarcerated. And they build a relationship. So there is always someone for a kid that's in high school or middle school to call another girl that's older than them to walk them through steps if they can't get hold of their mom in prison.
I think that's awesome, Jackie, what you're doing. I can't say it enough. And finally, I would like to ask you in closing, what advice do you give family members of justice-impacted individuals?
Wow, well, I can tell you this. I run a support group on Thursday night, family members, and join because you need support. It's hard. And give yourself some grace because the family members are my heroes. Every one of them that support an incarcerated individual, you're my hero. So you need help as well. So please reach out for support.
Thank you so much, Jackie. Keep doing what you do because it's desperately needed. I appreciate
Thank
you coming through.
And you keep doing what you're doing. Sure. You're doing an amazing job. I look up to you amazing. You're just doing a great job.
Thank you, Jackie. We'll talk soon.
Okay.
I'll definitely be in touch.
All right. Take care.